We found your bill.
Thank you. Rand's bill lost and found. Maybe it's in the lock box.
Can we go with Mahoney?
Representative Mahoney is chair of the committee, but he came up, and so we'd like to go on his first.
I would gladly stand down.
Thank you. Thank you.
Are you both here, sir?
Yeah.
We'll come to order. Do we have a quorum of people here?
We do.
And Representative Mahoney, we have House File 1214. I will give you a bill so we have it on the table for discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
With the provision that General Register, if it passes, if we get it through the committee, it can go to the General Register. How's that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
House File 1214, I have some testifiers to come up. I'll give you a very brief bill on what's going on with the bill. We have two very contentious issues trying to work toward an agreement. And we have made tremendous progress over the last 10 days. We have a couple of items in there in terms of how long they would have to pull onto a car, how they would have to report the vehicle to the police or to whomever. I'll forget most of them because I just ran up to another committee. There's proof of ownership, there's how long you have to hold on to the car, how you have to pay the person who owns this drunkard car. And where this all comes from is that a few disreputable dealers have been buying from, I shouldn't call them disreputable dealers. What I should call them is dealers have been buying from disreputable tow truck operators who have been going into people's driveways or from their house and hooking up perfectly drivable car and running it in the junkyard. And then anyway, getting out of title and getting $300 or $500 or whatever. And unfortunately, scrappers don't have a lot of room. They scrap them. They shred them or they flatten them or whatever. As soon as possible. Sometimes even before people know that the car's been stolen. So we have the Scrap Metal Dealers Association, we have the police departments, we have county attorneys, all working to figure out a way to better track and prevent these kind of thefts and get the car back if possible before it's shredded. So with that, we are working towards that agreement. It's still not there. But we are getting closer and closer. Sam is working on half and we are working on the other half. And neither will we move until they are brought together in the conference committee or on the floor of the House and Senate. With that, I would like to call up Ken Lee and Paul Cassidy. I'll get some extra chairs.
Can I take that one? And stop and give you a couple of chairs. You're already here.
Good evening, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Ken Reed with the St. Paul Police Department. I'm here representing law enforcement tonight and also Ramsey County Attorney John Choi. Ramsey County Attorney Choi could not make it here tonight. He's been a leader in crafting law enforcement's best effort to reconcile the legislation and meeting with both all the interested parties. And I'd like to thank him and also Representative Mahoney for bringing this forth. Current scrap metal regulations have not been adequate to address the problem. Metals in various forms and value at many, many thousands of dollars have been stolen in communities throughout the state, causing extensive loss and damage and hardship to homeowners, businesses, vehicle owners and farm implement owners. Metals such as copper, aluminum, and steel are stolen and scrapped for profit because valuations on the metals commodity markets provide the incentive. Scrap metal processors are the outlet for them. In just our community in 2010 and 2011, major resource-intensive police investigations demonstrated that the problem was extensive. We recovered 226 stolen vehicles from 53 different communities, recovered either actual physically or on paper from scrap metal businesses. Even after that successful investigation and the resultant prosecutions, the situation still occurs and the behavior still continues. In 2012, the St. Paul Police Department recovered 27 additional stolen motor vehicles representing 18 different jurisdictions from scrap metal businesses. My grandmother used to say that an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, and that's what we've been working towards in these legislative and regulatory provisions in the bill. We have compromised quite a bit as we've worked with the industry to draft this bill before you. The current bill is our good faith attempt to recognize the industry's concerns. One of the largest problems, as I understand it, for the industry is the proposed requirements for hold periods on automobiles. The physical footprint necessary to accomplish holds, even for a relatively small number of motor vehicles, creates a fiscal and geographic barrier on the industry's part. The issue for law enforcement and the victims is that many times vehicles are crushed, oftentimes within a very short period of time after the vehicle is stolen, as mentioned by Representative Mahoney, and before its loss is even ordered or reported to law enforcement. That vehicle no longer exists, and the vehicle owner, especially without adequate insurance, that loss is compounded. In this version, we reduced the 30-day hold period to no hold period for vehicles with proof of ownership, and a 5-day hold for non-titled vehicles. We believe the reporting requirements and the use of the automated property system will, in the end, not only close the information gap for law enforcement, so that we have timely notification on these losses, but we also believe it will create a business advantage as it helps to make for one entry point, or we believe, and that's what we're working towards, one entry point for the industry's other reporting obligations, such as to the Department of Motor Vehicles. It's not our intent to hurt or create harm for the industry, but rather to work with them as corporate citizens to ameliorate the harm and the problem. But we're all aware there's still some areas we're working towards, that there's some differences. Mr. Cassidy, whom we'll hear from shortly, we're working to iron out those differences so that by the time this bill reaches a vote, it will be a unified piece of legislation that will serve the best interests of all involved. Thank you for listening.
Mr. Chairman, members, Paul Cassidy with Red Walk on Bunner Street and Diner, representing the Institute of Scrap Recycling Industries, probably better known as your local scrap yards. I want to thank Representative Mahoney and also County Attorney Choi and Officer Reed for working closely with us on this legislation. We are making some progress, and I think we'll get there. Our industry works on a daily basis with law enforcement to try and prevent metal theft and from processing and purchasing stolen scrap metal day in and day out. It's something that the industry is very aware of. This goes back to 2007 when metal prices started to spike. Law enforcement came to the Capitol, and we actually did pass a law in 2007 that required scrap dealers to register and to take a lot of information from their customers in terms of personal identifying information and to keep track of the transactions that they purchased. Now here we are 6 years later, and we're addressing the same issue, except on two sides of the issue, with stolen cars and with just stolen scrap. And I think Officer Reed did a good job at explaining what the problem is on the street. We, obviously, with the bill as originally introduced, had a lot of heartburn over the hold period and also over the utilizing the automated pawn system. Most of our customers are law-abiding citizens, and they would have to give up personal identifying information to a public database that concerned us very much in terms of how that works with our customers. We are working with the authors and law enforcement now to come up with a system where we don't have to report one time. That is, right now we report to a national database all of our VIN numbers on cars that come through our facility. We also report to the Department of Public Safety. Reporting to the automated pawn system would have made three reports. we want, and I think what we're coming to a quick conclusion, we're going to try and streamline and interface all three of those so we can only have to do that one time. We'll streamline the system, hopefully make it more efficient not only for law enforcement to conduct their investigations, but more efficient for us to run our business as well. With that, I'll leave it at that. We thank obviously the authors and the law enforcement community and county attorney Ranger Strike for working with some closely with us, and we're making progress. Thank you.
Everyone, good morning.
Mr. Chair, and it's kind of a very strange deal. Strange road we're walking on here. Both sides started this quite a distance apart, and that's why they went having part of it done in the Senate and part of it done over here, so that we could meet all the deadlines and move it to the House floor. And then when both sides are agreeable with the House language and both sides are agreeable with the Senate language, we will join both these bills. And this bill won't come to the floor until everyone, both the Senator and I, are satisfied that this is a deal that both sides can live with, and they are in agreement. Unless it's maybe a comma or two.
What happens to the vehicle number? Is it trying to run across? Can't the salvagers remove that or something or other, and at least have a record of that when they start crushing the car?
Mr. Chairman, I think you're probably alluding to how quickly we process those cars. How can we save some evidence? As part of the legislation, I believe there will actually be digital photos taken of what's coming into the scrapyard, whether it's a bucket of copper or it's a whole car. So there will be that type of evidence. And then on the scrap side, not on the auto side, there will actually be pictures of that taken as well. But no hold period.
I was just thinking of the cars more or less. I forgot about exactly. Your...
But there will be digital photos of those.
All right. Yes. President Mason.
Chair Earhart. Mr. Cassidy. It just boggles my mind that somebody could get a car knowing that cars are coming and going and just get it to a salvage right away. I just can't fathom that would be an issue. I mean, it would seem to me if you don't have, especially, even if you had ID, but without ID, how could you possibly want to move it forward?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mason, a couple of things is to outline what we do now, or what they're supposed to be doing, what scrappers are supposed to be doing. And I want to remind the committee that one thing that triggered this was an investigation by the St. Paul Police Department and County Attorney Choi, approximately 18 months ago, or a little less than 2 years ago, with basically an auto theft ring, where they're pulling cars off the street in the middle of the night with a willing tow truck driver and a willing scrap driver that was willing to take the cars in. And that kind of triggered this. But the second one was the problem is the production of titles, and when you don't have a title. And when you don't have a title right now, first of all, if you're a good scrapyard and you're doing your job, red flags go up right away. So you're already, hopefully on alert. And then you ask for an identification or something. And when they don't have that, hopefully they tell them to hit the street. So it's hard, I think, at legitimate scrap operators. It's hard to get a car like that processed with no title. But another layer of this is you talked about people outstate, and we've had people testify to this in other committees. We have a lot of car hauls sitting out in the back 40 in rural Minnesota. We have one auto salvage company up in the Iron Range that he does about 400 of those a month, and they don't have any title. There hasn't been a title on some of those cars for decades. So that's kind of the problem you're dealing with. It's not as much an urban problem what he's dealing with stolen cars. But it's certainly a problem on the rural areas of processing those kind of junk cars.
And that's in the bill, and this has gone over in public safety, I believe it was, there's requirements for identification of the person bringing the scrap in. And there is a payment method when they don't have a title at this point. We've built that that's been built into the bill so that those people that are bringing them in. And I think one of the last pieces of contention, not being that the last, but one of the pieces that have to be worked out is how do you deal with those back 40 cars? Is there a way that you could register the car at the junk dealer, let it sit out in the field for another 5 days and then bring it in while they're checking to make sure? I mean, we're trying any number of different solutions and seeing if they work, trying them on and see if they can do it. But I have to compliment both groups. They have, in is it 10 days now, they have gone many, many, many miles. I have to say, they have really worked very hard at this.
Is there a time period between receiving a vehicle and the time they crunch it, or is there supposed to be in law?
In law? Yes. No, there's not a time period in law as it stands right now. And that's for us, again, repeating, Mr. Chair, if I may, that's the issue for law enforcement. In that, if we are aware of it, we've been able to get out there before. This question really is business dependent on how the timing of that. But their reporting requirement says they currently stand with Department of Motor Vehicles and the National Motor Vehicle Title Information Systems are from 10 to 30 days. And that's, without us having that notification, that vehicle is going to be crushed anyways and gone. As I noted, out of the 255 vehicles that we did recover, only 139 of them were just on paper. Unfortunately, we were able to show that. And this will help very much in identifying who's bringing them in. That's another big aspect.
Okay. Are there any questions? Representative Mason.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, Mr. Cassidy, again, and I did read where this is a hardship for rural dealers. Why is it so difficult for them? What is different about their operation than everybody else's?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mason, I think it's just the unique nature of there are a lot of abandoned cars in rural areas that they're trying to process that don't have titles. These yards are not very big, so if you bring in, it's not unusual for them to go and pick out a dozen cars out of a field in one day. That a farmer has accumulated over time, and Paul goes in and processes them. Now, under the original proposal, they would have had to have held them in their yard, and you wouldn't have been able to process them. That means, number one, they would have to find space to do it. Number two, it's a commodity. They're trying to run a business, and metal prices go up and down and fluctuate just like the stock market, and having to hold those can potentially cost them money.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Well,
Mr. Chair.
Everyone on deck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Cassidy, will this the requirements of record keeping, will that put some scrap dealers out of business? I mean, you wonder if they have the kind of office space to do this sort of thing and the books, and I mean, it just seems like a task. I don't know the business, but it seems like a lot to require. I'm sure it's important, but what kind of hardship?
Mr. Chair, Representative Runbeck,
yes,
just a couple of points there. First of all, if you're doing your job right now and following the law, you're already doing a pretty extensive record keeping on your transactions, not only on the auto side, but also on just regular scrap metal that you're putting in, whether it's a copper or whatever. Second, I think there's some thought being put into this in terms of the automated pawn system having to help some of those small businesses in terms of software, and some alternative way, or either helping them with the cost of utilizing the APS system, number one. Number two, having some alternative for them to comply with the requirements. There is a 90 cent transaction fee that will be paid by anyone transacting in a scrap transaction that will pay for the system. So there is resources there to to actually help out smaller businesses that might not have the means to do that.
Okay, thank you. And just maybe a follow-up. So if a car is reported stolen anywhere across the state, is there a system whereby that comes into the scrap metal folks so that they're looking for this? Or what's the connection there?
In the 2007 legislation, there was a provision that was made to use the BCA's crime alert program, and that was a fax-based program where an officer, if they had a personal minister, would put it out in scrap metal and subscribe to that system to do it. Mm-hmm. It hasn't been very well used. And for example, in St. Paul, we have nearly 2,000 vehicles stolen per year. That's just another burden on trying to get more information out. It just isn't well used. And that's why I think the automated property system, we believe, fills that void, not only as the single point of entry when we get that built that way, but also that immediately is recorded. It's almost real time. So that we have a person in our department and in other departments who use it every morning comes in and then looks at that, and it's going to be one click to look at. If I can, just for a moment, anytime a car is stolen and reported to us, it is put in the national database. So we can compare right away, real time, with that database, with the automated property system, and make that connection almost real time, or at least within 12 hours. And that's a leaps and bounds over what we have right now.
Officer Reed, are you there?
Listen,
Officer Reed, what kind of recovery ratio do you have out of 2,000 stolen?
Out of 2,000, about 80 to 85% are recovered within 2 to 5 days. Uh-huh. And the rest, sometimes up to 2 years later, on
okay.
New York or wherever.
More questions? Platoon. Yeah. Platoon. What
do you want, Platoon? Yes, I represent Mahoney. I think this was the bill that Sheriff Joel Brott was working with Representative Nick Zerwas on to incorporate some other things beyond scrap and in vehicles, correct? Is that...
Mr. Chair, Representative Fitzsimmons, we met with the sheriff, I think, 2 weeks ago in a meeting in Sherburne County to talk about the problem they were having there, many of which we've already gone over, but the big thing was really ag issues, where they were actually dismantling irrigation systems. And you can well imagine you've got a lot of time to dismantle an irrigation system if you're not farming. So that was really a big issue for them. So we've been working with the sheriff of there, Sheriff's Association, Chiefs of Police, a whole host of people. So a lot of people are tied into this.
Yeah, yeah. So that's been able to kind of make work within this bill then, correct?
So whereas St. Paul probably is coming from the auto side, I think the Sherburne folks are really into the scrap side.
Right, right. And it's both been able to work within this.
Well, that's the whole, that's
what
we're trying to
do. Final version. Well, I commend Representative Mahoney. It seems like going about this in the best way possible, so it seems like a good solution.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to echo what Representative Fitzsimmons was touching on here. It was part of the initial meetings in Sherburne County. And just to get a scope of the type of loss that you can have in the ag community. If you're a corn farmer and there's drought, if you don't get that water on your field, not only do you lose your expensive irrigation system, but you can lose hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of crop before you get your irrigation system back online. So if these thieves come in at the wrong time of the year, it's more than just an irrigation system you're losing. You're losing a substantial part of your crop. So I also am grateful that that you're incorporating this just to kind of complete the picture here.
It's cattle rustling of the modern era. Are there any more questions for the witnesses or Representative Mahoney? Representative Lindberg.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Since we're talking about all metals, does anyone here at the table have, what are the current prices of these various metals?
Crackers, though.
Nobody's following this? Okay.
Trying to stay awake at these I'm following.
Great, thank you.
So copper's good.
Yeah.
Anybody else? Well, how about if we move a motion to pass House File 1214 and send it to the Zoning Register. All in favor of that motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Good luck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Commissioner.
So you know,
okay. I'm going to call on Linda to explain this as I left my notes. I'm going to ask that this be passed and sent to the General Register. Is this Representative Linda? You didn't look like the rest of the crew.
Sorry.
No, I was really missed by that person. Okay, please.
Would you identify yourself?
That's not difficult.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Peter Zuniga. I'm with MnDOT's Office of Chief Counsel, and I'm the acting data practices compliance official. Before you today, we have House File 798. Section 1 deals with our mileage-based interesting data. In 2007, the legislature appropriated $5 million from that and required us to conduct a pilot study of the test technology as a new way to finance the construction of our roads and bridges based off of the number of miles we drive instead of the amount of gas we put into our gas tanks. We have 600 volunteers from Hennepin County and Wright County that had smartphones installed in their vehicles. The funding is programmed to submit road trip information to MnDOT. Prior to beginning the study in December of 2010, we filed a temporary application with the Department of Administration to classify the data as not public. The Commissioner of the Department of Administration classified vehicle identification data, financial account data, road usage data, and participants' names as not public. When we began the study in May of 2011, we provided participants with a Tennyson warning, where we did inform them that the data are classified as not public pursuant to the temporary classification. And there was a possibility that on August 1st, when the temporary classification expired, the data could become public unless the legislature classified the data permanently. What the bill also does is it allows MnDOT to produce summary reports of the pilot study, so as long as participants' identities couldn't be ascertained. It also provides guidance to MnDOT to when we can produce this information to law enforcement, which is to in response to a valid probable cause search warrant. Section 2 of the bill deals with our construction manager general contracting authority data. Last year, you gave MnDOT the authority to conduct this pilot contracting authority that's limited to 10 projects. What the CMGC classification does is it breaks the contracting process down into events and determines at what point in the bidding process data becomes public. At the end of the process, when a contract is fully executed, all the data becomes public. With that, I would answer any questions.
Madam Chair, I want to explain that this has already been to the data privacy subcommittee and passed there to the omnibus data practices bill, and I have no idea why it's back here. Anybody, can anybody tell me that?
We can pass it again and see where it goes next.
Now there's only the Zeno Register, and are we not, Madam Chair? Are we not having an omnibus data practices bill anymore, or what, you know?
Madam Chair, Representative Earhart, my understanding is that there likely will be a data practices bill, and this could be potentially included in that bill. There's nothing preventing the same division from being heard in another committee, moving in another committee. There would be separate bills. Often there are multiple versions of a provision that move in different bills.
Representative Earhart.
I just wondered. There are some more questions.
Are there any other questions? Seeing none, all those in favor of passing House File 798 to the Canada General Register, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign?
No.
House File 798 passes and we move to the General Register. Thank you.
Hi.
What are we going to say to this?
Well,
Representative
Earhart, we could send it to. I'll ask Mr. Burris, because, you know, I thought about transportation finance, but, Mr. Burris is. There's no general fund. If the MAC were to spend money doing some kind of a. Rehab of a room or construction of a room to for the purpose of meetings. Even if we wouldn't have to go necessarily to finance because we don't have a general fund. There's no general fund or trunk highway bonding in the MAC, is that correct?
There was some question if we wanted to discuss this further, and that's why I think that we were sending it to the committee.
Well, no, Mr. Chairman, I think it was really to see if there were financial implications. Whether it goes to my committee or to the floor, it'll give some time to see if the MAC wants to address any of the issues here. I talked to them, I made that commitment to them, but I'm not sure if it could go to the General Register, it could go to my committee. I just want to make sure it's the proper motion. In fact, it would properly go to the Finance Committee.
That's why we tried to send it last week.
Yes.
We couldn't find it.
I thought about this, I think, thanks to Representative Rybeck's interest in getting this properly before us. I wanted to make sure that was the correct motion, so I would defer to counsel on that.
Mr. Burris.
Madam Chair and members, the MAC is not a budgetary component in the Transportation Finance Committee that funds the MAC, so I would not anticipate a general fund implication from this bill. It would be a local impact in all likelihood that could be identified by the MAC, but there wouldn't be a transportation finance component. As to whether the bill goes there or should go there, that's typically custom and usage and largely a decision of the chair of the Transportation Finance Committee, so you could confer with that chair if you...
Mr. Burris, I think there was some question about the cost of holding all these meetings elsewhere and the possibility of building another facility or creating another facility for it in the current... So that, I think, was what was raised.
Yes.
Remember that, Doc?
Mr. Chair, I totally remember that. I just wanted to make sure, I just don't know if the Finance Committee has that portfolio, but I would defer to maybe my colleagues to help with that decision. I'm fine either way.
Well, that would be the cost component that we're talking about, and I think that's what was suggested.
Well, I'm fine that doing the same motion as I did last night, Mr. Chair, but we recommend to pass and send to transportation.
Okay, let's do that one then. Are there any other questions about that? If not, can you see me looking around? All in favor of that motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstained? We're on the way to transportation and finance.
Members.
We'll get the way as it comes by. Okay. Last night we had a bill missing, we now have an author missing. Let's see. Who raises their hands over there to do the minutes for March 13th?
Mr. Chair, I'm on March 13th.
Here's the minutes of March 13th. Are there any corrections or additions? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Yes. Adopted. We're doing the omnibus tomorrow at 3 o'clock in room 5. Friday.
Mr. Chair, why 3 o'clock? Just curious. How about 9?
Well, because we couldn't get a room till 3.
Oh.
I agree.
Maybe we can meet at the Metropolitan Airport.
Now he's
going to
be in.
Ready? Okay, she'll come in.
She just finished.
She's not here, sure. Well, what do we do? It's going to be a
summer,
right? No.
No, I mean, I...
Representative Hellstrom's in the house.
Ah, Representative Hellstrom. Did you dispense with your committee? Are you done? Oh, that's not enough.
Double fist in the
deal. What we're going to do here, I think, is change direction on this a little bit. we laid this over, if I remember, that we took it up, we laid it over. And my motion would be to pass this and send it to public safety. Because of the some interest there with safety things we're talking about here. So we have an amendment, Representative Wilson, that we'd like to put in there.
I do, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Do you guys have a copy of it, or is it all?
No, it's long. Unless you memorize it.
It doesn't say yes. It just says no.
Yeah, we have a copy, I guess, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Would you like to explain the amendment?
Mr. Chair, I'd like Mr. Qualley to explain it.
That's what we're hoping.
Would you like to pass this out? Which amendment?
Yeah, 02-1.
Yeah, we know that. I do at least.
Do you guys have amendment 02-49?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't finish.
Hello, next one.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. For the record, I'm Phil Qualley, State Director for the United Transportation Union. And today we present amended language on House File 1280, the 813-0249 amendment to advance vehicle safety toward more close compliance with the intentions of State Statutes 16971 obstruction windshield prohibitions. I must tell you that we are asking you to move on this amendment. However, UTU has made a written, with Representative Hillstrom's craft, a further amended language where we are making a commitment to be less exacting with the provisions of this amendment. And if I may just quickly state that we are making a commitment, if this bill passes today, to where at line 1.11, where it says mirror, we would add or roof lighting assembly. At line 1.23, where we've exacted certain specifications, we've increased the depth and made it clear that...
Well, slow down until council gets the idea of having...
Well, I'm not suggesting an oral amendment.
Oh, yeah.
Mr. Chair, if I might, Mr. Chair, we're going to adopt this amendment, but okay. We just want you to know that we are, they have come to some better understanding of the industry. Is that correct?
We're trying to work with all parties to craft a better bill. So, no, we're not asking for an Hopkins amendment. Thank you.
Okay.
It's just this one.
Well, let's just pay attention to this amendment that you have printed here.
Okay, very good. So we are committed to work with the carrier on this. I want to respectfully remind the committee that for UTU, our members, this is a safety issue. We do not believe that these consistent devices are consistent with the intentions of prohibition of windshield. And our need is for immediate safety relief here. Briefly from the carrier testimony the other day, we see the device is reactive technology and not preventable safety. We believe that there are better preventative technologies available. From the carrier and vendor, from the very vendor and carrier testimony, we're concerned that this is a lot of concern for liability here and after the fact versus what our guys and gals are going through is having this obstruction of the windshield right in front of them. I will just keep it brief and say that we question the carrier statistics. We'd like to know more about their statistical database. But the key piece is we're committed to work with everyone going forward. We think that it's a noble cause, and the industry will can provide that a smaller lens be put up in the windshield facing out as well as in the driver. And that we, this bill gives until August 1st, 2014, or 15 months to arrive at that technology, if it's available. And that is where we're coming from. We hope you'll consider passing this bill. I will say we've been criticized for talking about trying to have different motives with this legislation, but I assure you, while we're all looking at safety, we are telling you that this is an obstruction in our windshield, and we are trying to, I think it is appropriate for the legislature to set policy that manufacturers and industry moving technology to smaller and safer devices, lenses of which they're obviously up by the windshield, by the mirror, or ceiling, but that the appurtenance electronic equipment could be wired directly below the windshield, below somewhere, away, not obstructing the windshield. So that we're committed to work with all parties towards that end, and thank you very much for hearing our testimony.
I have nothing else, Mr. Chair. I just ask that you adopt this amendment and know that we are attempting to make certain that we can come to some consensus.
Any questions about the amendment? Representative Lundberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Qualley, I guess I just don't understand the concerns about with employees and the fact that a camera might be, you know, focused on them. I mean, where does that stem from? What's the background on that?
Did you say anything about that? I didn't hear you say that.
Well, first of all, in the employment relationship, our privacy is, I don't think we really have a legal standing to try to provide for our privacy. So we're willing to work with this and allow all images to be caught and captured in the vehicle. However, when it was named a driver vehicle feedback device, then it seemed reasonable to us to be focused solely on the driver is the one who's getting the feedback. So I hope I answer your question. Again, we're willing to work with the industry to improve this language as well as come up with a better device.
Anybody else? All in favor of the agreement, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. All right, we have it. As amended now, any further comments? I think we're pretty well ready to say over the past couple of...
Well, Mr. Chair, I thank you again for rehearing this bill, and I hope that you'll allow it to continue on the public safety so that we can continue to work toward this
So I think that without any further ado, we'll go ahead and vote on it. Paul, Representative Booth.
Mr. Chairman, is there anyone else in the audience who wants to speak to the amended bill, or are you not going to take any more testimony?
I think we've taken enough testimony on this, and this means the public safety, and at that time, if there are people who want to present other ideas, they certainly are free.
Thank
you very much. So you must represent the airlines.
Oh, that is so good.
Chair, John Athens, I'm with the railroads. You didn't pick that one up. This doesn't happen very often. I just want to mention one thing about this bill. We've been talking to Mr. Paul in the last couple of days about this, and technology he's suggesting doesn't exist. And because he wants it to exist, or you want it to exist, but it may exist, the technology that exists is the technology that is currently in place and has been demonstrated time and again to provide safer environments for people who ride in these vans, back and forth. So I understand where he's attempting to move this legislation, but I just want to let you know that I think that when I think something to happen doesn't make it happen, and I'd like to take advantage of what's here now. This has been demonstrated to make it safer for people who ride in vans, and I think we've had that conversation for quite a while. So I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Well, it's quite possible that by the time this is heard in public safety, that we have the technology necessary.
Innovation. Jobs.
May we take a vote on this and move it to public safety, please?
Jobs.
All in favor of that motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Bill is on the way to public safety.
Thank you, members.
I think we're free for now until 9:30 or something like that. And we will be meeting at 3 o'clock tomorrow afternoon in this room.
3 o'clock.
Five minutes.
Five.
Thank you.
Is there any chance